Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode number 50 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. For tonight is Thursday, April 27, 2017. And I'm your host, Big T, and we got a very special guest right here with us tonight. And, this is someone that I have been looking forward to having on the show for months now, and, get to have a nice chat and talk about many, many different things. We have Mr. Joe Dombrowski here with us tonight. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. It's been a hectic several weeks. I've been all over the place from here in Pittsburgh down to Orlando and all points in between, but, very thankful for everything I've been doing, and I'm very thankful for that very kind introduction as well. I appreciate you, having me on such a benchmark, episode.
Hey, I've been looking forward to it. I was actually planning, believe it or not, you know, now that I got you here, I'll tell this little story to everybody, believe it or not, I was actually planning on having you here for my first ever interview on my first podcast. And, now, you know, it's interesting all this time later, and here we're at episode 50, as you mentioned, a benchmark episode, and here you are. So, it was meant to be.
Man, so this thing is almost a year in the making, so this is a lot of pressure now.
I remember last summer, it was around June, I think, when we started talks last year. So, yeah, almost a year in the making.
Well, it was, hopefully it'll end up being well worth the wait.
Oh, I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will. And I'm sure all the fans are happy that you're here and you're chatting with us as well. And you know what, Joe? I would like to, I want to start off, before I get into my first question, I heard you talk about Orlando. You were down in Orlando for the big WrestleMania festivities this year?
Without a doubt I was. I was part of WrestleCon, big convention down there, talking about welterweight wrestling and debuting the welterweight championship title belt, selling my DVDs, Legend of Virgil, Montreal Fury, etc., and also had a chance to sit in the play-by-play chair down there and call CZW's Best of the Best 16 and call Wrestling Revolver's Pancakes and Pile Drivers and sit in with the former Rich Brennan from WWE SmackDown and help him call Wrestling Revolver versus Wrestle Circus, and had a chance to work backstage at the Revolution Pro event UK promotion down there, Andy Quilden. So, man, that was a busy 2 or 3 days, but that weekend is always just beyond compare. To have our passion, our business take over a major metropolitan city for an entire weekend, it's an experience that I encourage every wrestling fan to be a part of at least once if they can.
Oh, there's nothing like it in the world. Nothing like it in the world. I've actually been to the last 7 in a row. And it seems like it grows. And it gets bigger every single year. You know, that you're there. There's always something added. And I remember, now correct me if I'm wrong, because, I remember when I first started, doing this, it was at WrestleMania 27. And I remember that's what back when they had the Wrestle Reunion, convention thing that they had. It was kind of like WrestleCon. And then I believe, I don't know if it was WrestleMania 29 or WrestleMania 30 is when I first realized WrestleCon. Is that when WrestleCon started, or how long has it been going for?
The first WrestleCon, which is presented by my friends at High Spots, was the WrestleMania 29 weekend in 2013 in New York, New Jersey. And that was when I debuted my Montreal Theory project and had such an amazing time. It was my first wrestling convention, and I was blown away by how much fun I had. And you're right, it's only gotten bigger since then. It's only gotten more overwhelming since then. There's so much going on WrestleMania weekend. You can't even attempt to schedule out your weekend to hit everything you want to. You can't even attempt, you know, speaking for myself as somebody who has, you know, dozens of friends down there that I really don't get to see very often, you can't even attempt to run into everybody you want to. You'll see who you see, where you have to go, but there's just so much going on that it's impossible to really sort out and get everywhere you want to be, because at any given point, there's three or four different things going on at the same time.
Oh, it's, you know, it's so fast paced. Like you gotta be on your toes, and you gotta be ready to move and, just be ready to kind of take things as it comes when you're down there. It's like a whole nother world. To me, it's almost like a fantasy world, you know, like I'd rather be there than be at Disney World, you know?
Yeah, and sleep is the enemy down there, because there are a lot of long nights and early mornings. So as fun as it is, it's also a very stiff kick in the pants of a reminder that this is also work, and I can't stay up till 4 in the morning if I know I got to be up at 8 to drive back to the convention. So not a lot of, well, there's no downtime, to be honest. So by Monday morning, I wasn't upset that I was flying back home to Pittsburgh. That's for sure. I loved the weekend, but my body was ready for a break.
Oh, believe me, I know how you feel. Like, for me, it's exceptionally tough. Like, I have a lot of people that ask me, how do I do it? Because I have cerebral palsy. And, you know, it's hard for me to walk, you know, long distances with my disability. And, I went down there on Thursday when, Sasha Banks was signing at Access, and I stayed down there all the way until Wednesday night after the NXT tapings at Full Sail. It was a lot.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. But well worth it, because this is the business that we love.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. That is 100% correct there. And I actually got a few people I'm seeing in the, you know, people sending messages in like a live chat here while I'm doing the show. And a few people are going to, take your advice, Joe. There's a person telling me that they plan to attend WrestleMania very soon. So just that little bit of a talk is, getting some wrestling fans already talking about going to the Showcase of the Immortals.
Good. Well, I hope to see them down there in, New Orleans next year. And, I hope they can also make the trek out to Cleveland, Ohio on May 7th and see my welterweight wrestling live eye pay-per-view I'll be producing, because, I want that to feel special as well.
And you know what? I hope you guys get a big turnout, and we're gonna talk about that a little bit later, because I definitely want you to talk about the whole show and give everybody all the information that they do need. So everybody, please stay tuned for that. But Joe, I'd like to start off with your career. When did you decide, at what age approximately, that, you know, this business, this huge business, this huge world of pro wrestling, when did you decide that you wanted to get into this line of work and this is what you wanted to do for the rest of your life? And what was the first big job that you landed in the business to get you started?
I feel like I always wanted to do it, but I never saw it as realistic until I was probably about 12 years old. And when I was 12 years old, that was the big popularity boom of the late 90s. So not only was there a ton of Monday Night Television and WWF and WCW, but there were a lot of local independent shows getting television as well, because wrestling was an instant ratings hit back in 1997 and 1998. So I really didn't know what independent wrestling was until I was about 12 years old. I didn't know there was a local scene and there were three or four or five different companies that regularly ran events. So once I saw these events and that they are centrally located in the Pittsburgh area. They have local events, they have local training schools. I knew that had to have been my way in somehow. I just didn't know how. And when I was 16, I started regularly attending some of these independent events. I noticed they did a lot of fundraisers. They did fundraisers for high schools and youth groups, civic organizations. So I middlemanned a fundraiser between IWC Wrestling in Pittsburgh and my high school. As I was a junior, I believe. So at age barely 17, I'm co-promoting my first event and getting word all around my town. We ended up having a good draw. That was my first time in a commentator chair doing color commentary alongside Jeff Gorman, who was the voice of the area at the time. And that opened the door for me doing some writing for IWCWrestling.com and led to me doing more announcing when Jeff had to take a sabbatical to take care of his wife, because his wife was about to give birth to their first child. So that gave me a chance to slip in and get a little bit more my sea legs under me and get a little more comfortable. And by that point, I had done enough to where I was in the fold, and the rest grew from there. I've just been very fortunate to you know, have that opportunity given to me some 14 years ago, and with a little bit of elbow grease and some luck, I'm still here today, and I'm very proud of that.
And you got on to do some very, very successful things, Joe, and if I may talk about when I first discovered you, you know, when I first heard the name Joe Dabrowski, it was in 2007 during a Cleveland All Pro Wrestling show on Sports Time Ohio. And, you know, I know the whole history from Cleveland All Pro Wrestling to Prime Wrestling Ohio. I know it all. But before we jump into that, can you tell me a little bit about the years leading up to Cleveland All Pro Wrestling before the initial launch of it?
Well, Cleveland All Pro Wrestling had been around for, at that time, probably about 15 years. And it was promoted by a gentleman named JT Lightning, who unfortunately has since passed away from cancer. But JT was a very hard-nosed, old-school type veteran. It was his way or the highway, and he ran his locker room with an iron fist, but he had the respect of everybody. And he ran the events in Turner's Hall in Cleveland, Ohio. He trained M-Dog Matt Cross, Son of Havoc, Josh Prohibition, Johnny Gargano, a number of others in that building. And I'm very honored that the current events I produce up there are being held in that same Turner's Hall. Such a rich history there. But JT had run for about 14, 15 years, and the opportunity presented itself to the television on Sports Time Ohio, which was the television home of the Cleveland Indians, still is, I believe. And they had a year run on that particular outlet. There were some issues between JT and his business partner stemming from television, and there was a bit of a messy split between the two of them. And at that point, JT had gone his own way with Cleveland All Pro, and his former business partner had gone his own way, and that's what led to the creation of TWO, which eventually became Prime Wrestling.
Now, when Prime Wrestling took over, you know, when the name got changed and everything, were you the main guy running everything down there? Cause I know in Cleveland All Pro, you were doing the commentary, and then, you know, Prime Wrestling came along, you were still doing the commentary. Were you like, one of the lead guys running everything in the back and doing the work with Prime Wrestling, or, Were you just commentary for most of it, or how did that all go?
At one point, I was doing too much. I was excited about the start of PWO in 2007 because I thought there were so many young, hungry talents there, from Johnny Gargano to Gregory Iron, Matthew Justice, and Aaron McGuire. There were so many guys who I think just needed a little bit more of a storyteller's atmosphere. I think JT Lightning excelled when he's booking an old school house show card. He can give you a really entertaining 7-9 match card and construct it in a way where everybody leaves happy and they leave wanting more. I felt like television wasn't the best fit for the JT mold of booking. And that's not to say that it wasn't as good, it was just different. And I felt like if you would give a 6 months television story arc to a lot of these younger talents, they could excel. So, and a lot of them rose to the occasion. And I'm not going to say we did everything right. We sure didn't. But I was very proud of what we were able to create in those 6 years between PWO and Prime Wrestling. Towards the end, once we got to about 2012, 2013, I was doing way too much. I wasn't just booking the events and executive producing the television and dealing with talent relations. That in itself was a lot, but I was able to balance it. Towards the end, I had to take on more responsibilities when it came to promoting and when it came to managing things financially. And at that point, I was starting to burn out, and it became a lot more of a challenge to do the day-to-day. I had had help in prior years. Unfortunately, that help was beginning to fizzle out, and I was the only one really capable of juggling every responsibility. So, again, very proud of the run, but it got to a point where by year 5 or 6, it just got absolutely overwhelming to me.
And you know what? There's only so much that you can do. And I remember on the beginning of Resolution 6, because that is one DVD that I do own, I remember you talking about, you know, everything and, you know, how you just stated how you had to, you know, take a lot on with Prime Wrestling. Now, what led to all this? Like, I know Sports Time Ohio, when it originally started, was owned by WKYC Channel 3 in Cleveland, and then Fox Sports bought out Sports Time Ohio. Did Fox Sports, when they took it over, did they have anything to do with Prime Wrestling coming to an end?
That was a big issue. It was. We had a great relationship with Sports Time Ohio in the WKYC days, and the executives there were great to us. Patrick Kenny, the programming director, and the other executives were always very, very understanding and very supportive of what we were doing. And they had told us at one point we were the highest rated secondary programming that they had. So that was, you know, that was a lofty accomplishment that we didn't take lightly. And things were always a little bit loose when it was a WKYC operation. It was still a jamming operation. But once Fox came in, and they, I believe they officially made the purchase on December 31st, 2012, in came their corporate structure. And things were a lot more rigid, and things were a lot more precise. And once they had gotten the due diligence out of the way, they had decided that we needed a $5 or $6 million error and omission insurance policy, which would be separate from our live event insurance and general liability insurance. It would specifically protect the intellectual property and the rights and the licensing from a network perspective. So in case we do anything stupid, Fox isn't liable as a company. At that point in time, the company was not in a great situation financially because, again, I was more or less a lone wolf, and I was doing a lot on my own, and the help I did get did not always make the most fiscally responsible decisions. So at that point, I was looking at a television production team that were very, very talented and still are, but were becoming more and more in demand on the road doing mixed martial arts events and boxing events. I was looking at talent like Johnny Gargano and Matt Cross becoming more in demand as performers and being less and less available to us. I was looking at a local promoter and at one time financer who was burned out and had made a lot of terrible life choices and was not in a position to continue in the role that I needed him to. And I was looking at a television network that did not want us on television until we spent another large, hefty amount of money that basically would have doubled the financial stake I already had in the promotion. So at that point, I looked at that as the perfect storm of things. I sensed that I only had a few months longer being able to keep all of these entities tied together in one company before something was going to bust and something was going to cause us to, not be able to run in a prudent way. If we lost our production team or if we lost our television or if I lost the local promotion that I had on the ground, any of that would have been losses that would have been nearly impossible to recover from, let alone having all three be a challenge at once. So I decided it was best to end on a high note. Our biggest event was always Resolution. Resolution 6 was coming up, and I was firmly committed to getting us through Resolution no matter what, no matter the cost, no matter the stress level on me. And I was very proud of that event. I think we were able to put a fitting final chapter on the company and on all of the wrestlers that were in the company. And leaving Resolution 6, we didn't know it was the end. We knew it was the end as we knew it, but we didn't know it would be completely the end, but we kind of figured it might. So it was a bittersweet moment. It really was. But I look back on that happy. I look back on that happy that we were able to say goodbye in a way. We didn't leave on a scandal, or we didn't leave on a canceled show, or we didn't leave bouncing a check on somebody. We left having fun and doing what we do best, and that's putting on great professional wrestling events. So I will always be proud of Resolution 6. And even though part of me still wishes we didn't have to say goodbye, I realize it was probably the right time.
And you know what? As being a huge fan of Prime Wrestling, I even got to say, you know, after hearing everything that you had to go through to try to keep everything afloat and everything, you know, that Fox was putting on you and, you know, everything that you're dealing with, I think that you probably did make the right call. That it was the right time because you don't want it to become one of those things where you hang in too long and, you know, you don't have that definitive ending. Like, I remember the last year of Prime Wrestling, and it was one of the best years that you guys ever had. And I remember pressure rising, you know, leading up to, like, that whole last year. You know, everything really went perfectly. It was like the storybook ending. Resolution 5 is when you had Vic Trivilianti turn on Justin the Bar. You know, the megalomaniacs, you know, they wanted to take over and go head to head with LaBar, and then pressure rising. Everything came to a head where the megalomaniacs won and they were in power. And Vic and the Megalomaniacs, I remember they were in power from pressure rising all the way up until Resolution 6 when LaBar got control back. You guys brought Gargano out at the end. He won the title from Crimson. It ended at the highest note that it possibly could have ended on.
Yeah, and I think it was a great example and illustration of art imitating life, where we had a company with an uncertain future, but the people that built that company, like a Gargano and a Gregory Iron and a Zach Gowen and a Bobby Beverly and a Matt Cross, were able to rise up and defeat those forces of evil that were trying to overtake it. I thought it was a great story to be told. And again, for it to still resonate with you 3 to 4 years later, to me is the greatest compliment you can give me.
Oh, it's something, Joe, and I'm not just telling you this because I have you here on the line right now. I'm saying this because I really mean it. Prime Wrestling will be, it's always going to be that, that little indie promotion that'll always have a piece of my heart. Because that
and
was...
You know what? It's always going to have a piece of mine too. And it's not just because of how much time and effort I put into it, but I loved that talent roster. I loved that production team so much. Still do. And it's why I keep the memory out there. It's why I put out the Prime Cuts DVD series, our 10-volume best of set. It's why I put out the Resolution Anthology, all 6 resolutions in one set. And it's why I keep selling them to this day at events I go to across the country and on my website, because I will always be proud of us being able to literally start from almost nothing. Completely severed ties from Cleveland All Pro, no identity of our own yet, and being able to create something that was that impactful and special.
I remember something about, I think it was when it was Prime Wrestling. Did you guys by any chance have a relationship with, TNA at one point? Because I remember, on some of the shows on Sports Time Ohio where, I believe it was like a Biz versus Samoa Joe, or it would be like a TNA guy versus like a Prime Wrestling guy. Did you guys used to work with TNA?
Well, that was back in the Cleveland All Pro era. There was no direct relationship there. It was just a case of, at that point, TNA was not doing live events, they weren't really touring, so their talent was available for independent dates. So if an Abyss or a Samoa Joe or a Rhino were free, they were certainly open to being booked at that point. Once PWO and Prime Wrestling came along, TNA had grown to the point where they were not allowing their talent to appear on other television programs, so we weren't able to have access to TNA talent, which was well enough and good for me, because I always focused on taking the young, undiscovered talent that's just getting a little bit of a buzz, a little bit of intention, and molding and cultivating something for them to where I'm not taking credit for anybody's success, but if I can give them a platform, or if I can just tilt their body a little bit to the left or the right and give them a little nudge forward, this is the direction you have to go in. I was always more than happy to. I think that's what made Prime Wrestling special. That's what made PWO special. And honestly, that's what I enjoy most about doing the events I'm doing now in Cleveland at Turner's Hall Premier Championship Wrestling. And it's what I'm enjoying most about this welterweight wrestling event as well.
Yeah, it's these events to make an impact, you know, to leave an everlasting memory. Like, you know, whenever I see Johnny Gargano, and I've talked about Johnny Gargano time and time again on the show, and I try to give people, you know, insight on Johnny Gargano and as to who he really is, because, like I said, I live in Cleveland, but for people that are not from Cleveland, or the wrestling fan that's not from Cleveland, or didn't get a chance to see Johnny perform in the indies, you know, they don't know everything that he's went through and all the great matches and undiscovered matches that he's really had. And now to see him in NXT and, you know, possibly being on his way to the main roster soon, you know, it's like when I look at Johnny, I think Prime Wrestling. Like, that's the first thing I think of. Like that is a, like that is something that will always be associated with Gargano. And I'm sure a lot of wrestling fans that are from Cleveland and that live in Cleveland and are familiar with it, they'll always remember that too.
I'm always going to feel the same way about Gargano. Absolutely. I know what Johnny's capable of doing, and I'm so proud of him. He was such a shy kid when I met him when he was 18, 19 years old, and to see how he's grown and developed, and just exploded across this wrestling scene gives me so much pride for him. Few people I'm happier for in this entire business than Johnny Gargano. And I can say for a fact he will be on that main roster before long, and he will be in big match situations because I've seen firsthand in prime wrestling, Johnny Gargano can carry a company. Johnny Gargano has that magnanimous personality that he can be on top of the world. He can suck you in. He can draw you in. He can give you the action. He can give you the athleticism. He can give you the drama. He can give you the emotion. He can give you every element that you need. And whenever I put him on last, whenever I put him in a main event, I never had to worry because I knew he was going to do justice to himself, to his opponent, to the product, and to the people there. And he held that badge with honor. And he loved carrying that ball. And I have no doubt he'll be carrying a ball again very soon, whether it's the NXT Championship or whether it's the top title at Raw or SmackDown. I think that's Johnny Gargano's destiny, and I think something pretty catastrophic would have to happen to keep Johnny Gargano from being a bona fide world champion someday.
I totally agree, Joe. Johnny is he's a talent unlike any other. He really is. He has the heart, he has the desire, he has all the resiliency in the world, and I wish nothing but the best for him as well, and, you know, I just, I don't mean to go on and on about, about prime wrestling, I just wanted to have, you know, a nice little section, in the show about it, but I wanted to have this conversation about prime wrestling and all these memories, you know, on a section of the podcast just to educate everybody about what a special company that it was and what an impact that it has had for people that don't know about it. And maybe people that are listening to this podcast, maybe they will be, you know, inspired and intrigued to order some DVDs from you to witness.
Well, I would love to have that happen. And if anybody's curious of doing that, they can log on to joe-dombrowski.com and they can order the complete, 10 volume best of set, or they can order them individually or the Resolution Anthology. So I would love for anybody to come sample the product. And I mean that genuinely. I am in shill mode right now, but honestly, if you're a fan of Johnny or M Dog or Jimmy Jacobs or DJZ or Gregory Iron or any of the great talents we've had through the years. I love that we were able to take them and put them in a setting to maximize their value, in my opinion, to maximize their value and put them in compelling emotional situations that, as you've been a great advisor for, an example of, moments that stick with you through time. And again, that's the biggest compliment you can give me is that if something I did or a match I called or something I had a small hand in producing 4, 5, 6 years ago is still at the forefront of your mind, that speaks to the power of our business. And M. Dog Matt Cross has his new clothing line, Wrestling is Forever. And to me, that's really what that means. You know, wrestling is something that just sticks with you for the rest of your life. You may not remember who won or lost. You may not remember every match on the show. But you remember how that night made you feel. And you remember the important moments that really, really resonated with you. And to me, that's the most powerful thing about our business, the ability to make our audience feel.
And, you know, that's exactly Exactly right. There's so many memories, you know, that I could go on forever. And another masterpiece that you guys had in Prime Wrestling was the Dead Wrestling Society. That was a stable that I really loved. It reminded me of like this New Age Ministry of Darkness, you know, type thing. And the Dead Wrestling Society was another great thing about Prime Wrestling that really stood out to me. You know, could go on and on. Gregory Iron and Zach Gowen, the Handicap Connection, and, you know, all the guys, Gargano, Matt Cross, the Dead Wrestling Society with Crimson, Cursed, and Gory. I mean, so many great things.
And the Dead Wrestling Society was very much Kevin Sullivan mixed with Charles Manson. It was psychotic. It was psychological. It was dark. It wasn't about winning and losing matches. It was about taking away everyone's hopes and dreams. It was about depriving others of happiness as they had been deprived of happiness in their lives. And it was such a 180 from anything else we were doing. To me, Gory is the most underrated athlete in wrestling right now. He is a major part of the Premier Championship Wrestling events I'm doing every month in Cleveland and Turner's Hall. Those DVDs are priced very affordably now at joe-dombrowski.com. We have digital downloads, too, if anybody hasn't seen the product yet. We've been running out of Turner's Hall for the past 8 or 9 months. We've been gaining some momentum, and I'm very happy where things are going. June 17th, Gory is bringing Crimson back to Cleveland because Crimson is challenging a man by the name of Andrew Palace for the PCW Premier Championship. So Gory and Crimson's relationship are still shaking up Cleveland all these years later, and it certainly started with what they did in the Dead Wrestling Society.
It's amazing that it's still going, you know, it's still there, it's still alive, and you know, the one thing I just loved the way that prime wrestling was booked. You know, you guys had the Dead Wrestling Society that I spoke of, and you had your heroes like Gargano and M-Dog, and the amazing thing was in a time when the PG era was pretty much starting to, you know, start on the business, here was this small indie company that, you know, you didn't have to go overboard, you know, and really do anything extreme like ECW or the Attitude Era or anything like that, but still you guys were able to find this perfect balance to be edgy and have this great, just like five-star match after five-star match, and just have this great quality with this edginess yet too. It's like, I remember seeing, you know, there were kids that would go and sit in the audience of Prime Wrestling. And I remember when, you know, Crimson would come out and they'd show the kids in the audience and the kids would be scared of Crimson. And it's like, it would be, you know, there would be families there, but yet it would still have that edgy twist that everybody loves about pro wrestling. And you guys were just that, you went right to it, you know. It wasn't about, you know, any kind of soap opera entertainment type thing. You guys went and you told great stories, and it was all about wrestling. And Prime Wrestling was just a incredible promotion, and I want to say thank you for everything that you did with that promotion, and for giving us, or for giving me, and I hope anybody else that's listening that knows what I'm talking about, for giving us all those great memories with PWO.
Well, thank you guys. The best way to say it is, without you, there is no us. So thank you for giving us the opportunity to tell those stories and to do what we enjoyed doing. I hope to be able to continue to do that in my current projects and projects to come for a long time. But that's very much appreciated. That's very kind words.
Oh, you're welcome, Joe. Couple more things I want to touch on. Definitely want to touch on your current projects. Before I get there, can you tell us a little bit about the Montreal Theory?
The Montreal Theory was a project I started developing in 2011, 2012, which basically stemmed from the growing interest in conspiracy theories, from Jesse Ventura's television show to JFK assassination theories, et cetera, et cetera. I watched Wrestling with Shadows, which was a documentary that was produced by Paul Jay, which involved the cameras following Bret Hart around leading up to the Montreal Screwjob in 1997. And it struck me what a perfect narrative that was to the public story. Bret is the Canadian hero that got screwed. Vince is the evil tyrant who, ruled business with an iron fist. And I just started thinking about how perfectly the Screwjob ended for everybody. Sean won the title. Vince was able to create the Mr. McMahon character and become a billionaire. Bret went to WCW and got one of the largest guaranteed money offers in the history of our business, making almost $9 million over 3 years. For what was supposed to be a huge scandal and screw job, there really wasn't a victim here. And if you watch back the year or so prior to Survivor Series, everything kind of fits as a story. Bret's the Canadian hero that says everybody's screwing him. He's coming out, he's confronting Vince at the announce desk when Vince was still just TV announcer. And the lines between reality and performance were very much blurred, more so than ever. A lot of inappropriate comments were sneaking its way on the air. There was obviously some tension there, but I got to thinking, what if this was all planned? What if, because if you were going to tell this story from Bret coming back in Survivor Series 96 to wrestle Steve Austin, and he cuts the big promo, he signs a 20-year contract and says he'll be in the WWF forever. That is a perfect starting point to where the story goes. Austin screws Bret, Sean screws Bret, Bret keeps losing, Bret feels cheated, Bret turns sour, Bret turns into the villain, Bret's storybook Cinderella comeback completely falls apart. His issues with Sean overshadow his career. And what's the poetic Romeo and Juliet tragedy ending? Well, he gets screwed by the one guy he's been able to count on for 20 years, Vince McMahon. And Bret the Hitman Hart as a character is dead. And I'm not saying I believe that that was a preconceived plan between Vince and Bret. I'm saying it was possible, and there's a lot of evidence that says it could be possible, and that it makes sense. And Steve Corino, who in my opinion is very bright, he believes that Vince and Bret were in on it. Jerry Lawler believes that Vince and Bret were in on it. He was sitting ringside. So Montreal Theory is a panel debate, basically, without the panel. We had a bunch of different interviews, 10 or 12 different interviews that we cut together. Experts from every era and job title of wrestling. We just asked questions. And we tried to unravel, is it possible there was a conspiracy here and Vince and Bret were secretly working together? If it's possible, how did they do it and when did they hatch the plan? And it has been my largest selling project to date. It has spawned a lot of people telling me I'm a genius and a lot of people telling me I'm crazy. And I'll let the viewer at home and the listeners at home figure out which one they think. I don't believe either one personally, but that's what Montreal is. It's just asking questions, and it's a metaphor for life. Don't take things at face value, whether it's in politics or in business or anywhere. Just because you're told something doesn't mean you can't ask questions, research, and find out if this isn't full of crap or not. So I was very happy to make Montreal Theory. It's been a pet project for about 3 years, and the reception when it came out honestly was above and beyond my expectations.
You know what? And it definitely sounds like an interesting watch. You know, I might have to get my hands on that DVD and check it out because I've heard a lot of things about it. I just haven't sat down and actually seen it yet, but just hearing everything that goes into it definitely has me intrigued. And you know, it's like when you're talking about the theories, you know, it actually got me thinking too. Like, you know what? Another thing, Vince McMahon loves to make money. He loves to make money. That's like his main thing. And I'm just wondering, you know, you think of all this with the Montreal screw job and how Mr. McMahon was born. Then you have the rivalry with Austin that made so much money. But not only that, 13 years later, in 2010, Brett comes back. You know, he forgives Shawn Michaels. They hug in the middle of the ring. And then you see this whole Bret Hart, Vince McMahon storyline play out going into WrestleMania 26, pays off in a match where Bret Hart and Vince McMahon have this big match and all, you know, finally you see Vince McMahon get taken apart by the whole entire Hart family pretty much. Bret Hart hitting him with the chair, putting him in the sharpshooter, and I can only imagine how much money that made for Vince McMahon and even Bret. And you know, it's just interesting how it turned out. You know, it all started with the Hall of Fame introduction at WrestleMania 22. It's almost like the seeds were slowly planting themselves. So it's like, yeah, you gotta wonder, you know, it's interesting.
It is interesting, and I think if it had not been for Bret's health and for a lot of other personal issues that had gone on at the time, Bret probably would have come back a lot sooner. But the point is he did come back after years of promising he would never use the Montreal incident as a way to build a match. He ended up doing that. So, hey, every story has its payoff, and even Bret and Vince had theirs. So I definitely don't think it's out of the question.
The same here. So for anybody that just heard of anything that we just discussed, go to joe-dombrowski.com and purchase the Montreal Theory DVD. I know I'm going to be doing that in the future. It sounds like a great, great watch and just a great listen to try to get some facts and, you know, just, some even theories of your own, you know, judge it as you will.
Without a doubt, I leave it open-ended because I don't know the answer for a fact and I want the audience to interpret what they think the answer is. I don't know that we'll ever know for sure unless there's a deathbed confession at some point, but, I'm not here to preach and proselytize. I'm here to tell you, here's what I've found out. You can figure out what you think the conclusions are.
Yeah, and you know what? That's the best way to put it. Let everybody make their own interpretations and feel about it how they want to feel about it and, you know, go about it how they want to, and that's a good thing. So, you know, that project, definitely want to check that out and give that a listen. And we can move forward from Montreal Theory to what you're doing now. And tell us about your projects in the here and now, what you got going on at this moment, because we all heard how great Prime Wrestling Ohio, that project was. And just curious what you got going on now. Let's talk all about that, because I know I told everybody in the beginning, including you, Joe, I know I told you we'd talk about it. So now's the time. I'm giving you the floor. Tell us about everything you got going on right now.
Well, I mean, to be honest, there's a lot of similarities, in my opinion, between Prime Wrestling and what I'm doing now. It's in the same city. I'm holding the same main job titles as the producer and the lead announcer and matchmaker. And I'm really enjoying it. There's a few talents there that I know very well from the Prime days. There's a lot of new young talents coming up that deserve spotlight, but for the past 9 months, I've been regularly producing events in Termers Hall in Cleveland under the Premier Championship Wrestling banner. You can find out more about that at facebook.com/Premier Championship Wrestling or at PCW Cleveland on Twitter. And we got a great array of talent from Gory to Crimson to Ricky Shane Page to Ron Mathis to Andrew Palace to Jason the Gift Kincaid, Gannon Jones Jr., Chris LaRusse, a lot of other guys. Those events are going on for the most part monthly. Our next traditional PCW event is Saturday, June 17th. But before we get there, it'll be the very first presentation of Welterweight Wrestling at Turner's Hall Sunday, May 7th. And I got the idea for Welterweight Wrestling watching the Cruiserweight Classic, watching the UK tournament on the WWE Network, hell, watching a product like Shimmer. And I see how they hit one niche fan base very, very hard and very, very thoroughly. And I wanted to find something that could be that niche product that no one else was doing. And I watched 205 Live, and the thing is, I think the idea of a cruiserweight division in 2017 is a tad bit outdated. You needed a cruiserweight division in 1997 because Rey Mysterio, Dean Malenko, and Eddie Guerrero were stealing the show against each other. They weren't going to be compatible in the ring with Hulk Hogan or Roddy Piper or Bill Goldberg. But you fast forward to 2017 and you've got guys who are 205 pounds or so, like Tony Nese or Austin Aries, working in the cruiserweight division. And then you've got guys like Seth Rollins and AJ Styles, who are about 215 or so, doing a lot of the same style and same things as those cruiserweights. And I think anyone on the cruiserweight division, especially a guy like Austin Aries or Tony Nese, are equally as good, if not better, than anybody you can see regularly on Raw and SmackDown. I don't think a cruiserweight is this generation's version of the overlooked, underappreciated star that deserves a break. I love the cruiserweights there. I'm a huge fan of TJP. I'm a huge fan of Drew Gulak, Rich Swann. I love these guys. They deserve every dollar of their contract and then some. They deserve an opportunity to be in NXT and WWE or wherever their fate ends up placing them. But the cruiserweights have a place. The cruiserweights have a home. In 2017, I think we need to look down a notch in the weight class, because I go to these independent shows and I'll see a 170-pound guy, a 160-pound guy, a 180-pound guy who is stealing the show, looks great, but, oh, yeah, well, they'll have the match tonight, but they're not big enough to be in the main event. They're not big enough to be taken seriously in a heavyweight title match, or, you know, they're great, but you can't put them in a Ring of Honor or an Impact locker room because the size would be too different. There's guys like that who are more than good enough and have these underground fan followings. They have this base that's very loyal to them. So I thought, what if we take a cruiserweight concept, lower the weight limit to 185 pounds and under, call them welterweights, and let's bring from all across this country every young individual who has not had that big break yet, has not had that shining opportunity, is still a little under the radar, and needs that platform to break out. Let's get them all in one place. Let's get them all in an even playing field, and let's see who excels. Let's see who stands out, and let's really see who's ready for prime time, who's ready for a big opportunity that maybe has been overlooked so far. And that's what welterweight wrestling is. It's a new spin and a new age on the cruiserweight style, because you're going to see not just high-flying, you're going to see every different style. You're going to see every different personality, every different walk of life, together in one building in a war of attrition. We'll start with 16. By the end of the night, one will be left standing, and he will be the first ever welterweight champion. And you can see it live May 7th in Cleveland at Turner's Hall, or if you are elsewhere in the world, you can watch 100% live in HD on the Fight TV app, F-I-T-E. You can download the app or go to fight.tv. I'm very proud of this roster. I'm very excited. Guys like Jason Gorey of the Dead Wrestling Society, guys like Sammy Guevara, guys like Ace Perry, guys like Dylan Bostic, guys like Trigger Trey Miguel, guys like Sonny Vice, guys like Ophidian the Cobra from Chikara, guys who have had their bit of success, but in my opinion deserve so much more, will have a platform all their own on May 7th. And for one low price, you can watch on Fight and get unlimited lifetime replays. I want this to feel, you'll appreciate this, I want this to feel from the production to the talent to the passion in the ring, I want this to feel like a resolution.
And just by the way that you are talking about it, by the passion in your voices, you are speaking to all of us. I'll tell you, I'm holding my arm up to the camera right now. I got goosebumps listening to you talk about it. I really did. And,
I appreciate it. And I hope you get that same feeling when you're able to watch on May 7th. And I hope you get that feeling when we crown a champion. And I hope you're able to get that feeling when that champion can move on to even bigger and better things down the line, like a Johnny Gargano has. Because again, this is something that's never been done. There have been welterweight champions in Mexico, in Europe, in Japan, but there's never been a welterweight champion in the U.S. that I know of, and there's never been an event done specifically with these ground rules that everyone must hit under 185 pounds. And really, in a lot of ways, Ring of Honor and companies like that are shying away from guys that size. I looked at the Ring of Honor roster on their website. Out of their entire roster, only two people qualify to be welterweights. So even they are skewing more towards 200 pounds, 210, 220 pound athletes. And their product's great, don't get me wrong. But again, these guys deserve a home. I'll give you an example of a guy like Nate Wings. Nate's a kid out of Dayton, Ohio. He's 5'3", he's 145 pounds. He is somebody that so many promoters have looked at and laughed at and dismissed and overlooked and cast aside. But I will give Nate credit. I think Nate is the embodiment of what this welterweight division is, because when I first saw him years ago, he just looked like an average kid. Nothing really special, but he has worked tirelessly in the gym. He has put on muscle. He has leaned up. He has cut up. He has added for his frame. He's added a considerable amount of power, and he's special now. He's different. He's been appearing on these Premier Championship Wrestling events for the past several months for me, and every time he comes in, he's one of the top three or five most entertaining guys on the show, and the people love this guy. And this is all being 5'3", 140 pounds. So imagine what he can do if we put him in a more even playing field, in a welterweight environment where he'll still be the smallest guy in the event. But, okay, he's not competing against a guy that's 220. He's competing against a guy that's 180 or 170. What can Nate Wings do? Guys like that is why this is special and why this is important. Because if you look at the main draws in combat sports, Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey, Money Mayweather, none of these people are 6'6 and 270. None of these people drew a dime because of how tall they are or how much they weigh or how many muscles they have. It was all because they were attractions. And I think there's something attractive from a marketing standpoint about every single person on this welterweight show, but they have not gotten the opportunity because wrestling is inherently still skewed toward guys larger than them, even in an era of 205. So, you know, looking at guys like that and guys like Ryan Kidd, who's been all over the world, and Dylan Bostic, who's doing great in Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, and Ace Austin, who's doing great in CZW Dojo Wars, and Sammy Guevara, who's doing great down in Evolve, and Ophidian, who's doing great in Chikara and all over the world. Guys like that all together in one place for the first time, that gets my competitive juices flowing, because all of these guys are going to, most of them are 25 and under. They're all going to want to make sure that you and whoever else is watching this pay-per-view, when you're done, their name is at the tip of your brain and the tip of your tongue. So it's going to be such a competitive field. and I can't wait to see how it shakes out. And I'm going to be ringside calling the action along with my friend, the franchise Shane Douglas, who knows a little bit about controversy, a little bit about running his mouth, and a little bit about crowning a champion for the first time and shaking up the wrestling business, because he did it himself 25 years ago with the NWA and ECW. So I can't wait to see what's going to happen, because all these guys are going to come in balls to the wall, ready to make a statement.
Wow. And I, you know what? I couldn't agree with you more. As a young talent like that, that's looking to make a name for themselves, they're going to break through that glass ceiling. They're going to give you a show to be remembered. And I, wow. I'm sitting here all pumped, Joe. You got me all pumped up, and I gotta tell you, you know, you are on the brink of history. You are on the brink of history, legit, because like you said, to your knowledge, there is, you know, as far as you know, there was never a welterweight champion in the United States for wrestling. And here in Cleveland, Ohio, and it's gonna happen. It's going to happen for the first time ever in the United States on May 7th, 2017. So you're on the brink of history. And I'm so happy that you're able to come on the show and share this with us, because this is really big for the industry. Really, you could be on the brink of starting a whole division that's going to catch the wrestling world on fire.
I certainly hope so. I'm happy to be a part of this vision. I'm happy to be here to share it with you. I want you guys listening to be part of this vision too. As I said before, without you, there's no us. We can do this together. We can create something truly special right in our own neck of the woods. And I don't know what the future is going to hold. The welterweight championship will be defended monthly at Premier Championship Wrestling. I can guarantee that. There will be future welterweight wrestling events. They're going to stay special. It's not something I'm going to do every month, every 2 weeks, because this is a fresh idea that can still be cultivated. Maybe welterweight wrestling too will be next year. Maybe it'll be in 6 months. Maybe it'll exceed my wildest projections, and I'll have to rush one out in 2 or 3 months. I don't know. I'm going to wait and let and see the audience tell me, and the market tell me, and the numbers tell me. But this is just the beginning. And this could go a number of different directions. I would love to see the welterweight title defended in other companies across the country. I would love to see welterweight wrestling events go to other cities in the country with local promoters that are into the concept. Really, there's so many directions it can go. There's so many possibilities that it would be a disservice to even attempt to talk about them all. All we can say is that we won't get there without a hell of a chapter one. And that's what May 7th is all about. It's about setting the tone and laying the groundwork for what we are and who these athletes in the ring are and what they hope to accomplish.
I'm looking forward to it. And I wish you all the success in the world as far as getting this off the ground and getting this division out there and getting it noticed, because I got to tell you, just hearing you, the way you talk about it and your passion for this and just the way that you've built this up, I got to tell you, you sold me on it. You sold me.
Well, I appreciate that very much. We'll definitely have a hell of a time May 7th, and I appreciate you giving me the platform to talk about it.
Oh, not a problem at all. And as far as Premier Championship Wrestling, the show that you guys got coming up in June that you spoke of earlier, would you like to speak a little bit about that and tell everybody what's coming up, like, on the card for that and what you guys are planning?
Well, I can announce that we have two big matches signed for June 17th. It is going to be the embodiment of Evil Crimson, former Prime Wrestling Champion, will be challenging Andrew Palace, the frenetic energy and the most enthusiastic young athlete in PCW. That'll be for the PCW Championship. And Crimson is there representing the Culmination, which is the new group that has been formed by Gory. Gore will be in an 8-man tag team matchup with his disciples. As you see, the generational pattern moves on. Gory now has disciples. Remy LeVay, the Mind Eraser, and Atticus and Otis, the Coger brothers. That will be an 8-man tag team match against Nate Wings, his tag team partner, the baddest man alive, Aaron Williams, and the Chikara Campeones de Parejas, tag team champions of the world of Chikara, Cornelius Crummles and Sonny DeFarge. We're also going to see stars like J-Rock. We're going to see stars like the welterweights. There will be a welterweight showcase match there. Chris LaRusso will be on hand recently from the Ring of Honor Top Prospect Tournament. Excuse me. And a lot more. And some of those matches will be made based on the fallout of what happens May 7th as well. But if the welterweights aren't your cup of tea, or if you want something you can go to every month, PCW is going to be hanging around Turner's Hall for a long time to come. We have events scheduled through the summer and beyond. So hope you can make it out Saturday, June 17th for PCW. And again, people have told me there's a lot of a prime wrestling feeling in PCW, which makes sense because, I mean, I haven't put more of myself into any other two projects than I did with Prime and I'm doing now with PCW. So I appreciate that comparison a lot. And I just hope if anybody's within driving distance, they can come out and support. And if they can't, I'd appreciate you checking a DVD out off of my joe-dombrowski.com website and just let me know what you think.
I'm definitely going to be checking stuff out, whether it be going to a show or getting the DVD, because I got to tell you, I want to see what PCW in this welterweight tournament is going to bring to the table. I feel like it's going to do a world of wonders for this glorious world of pro wrestling.
I hope so, my friend. I have all the confidence in the world in the talent roster to deliver, without a doubt.
And I wanted to touch on, before I let you go here, I wanted to touch on just a couple more things. I know we spoke of Prime, we spoke of, you know, your current projects and everything that you got going on. Now, I've heard this, like I've wondered this, and I've even heard this from people that were fans of Prime Wrestling, you know, some people that I do know. And I'm just curious, and I know you got Premier Championship Wrestling going right now. And like when we were talking about Prime earlier, you know, you were talking about when it ended. You know, how you didn't know at first if it was really going to be the end, but then it turned out to be the end. Now, do you think there is any possibility that there will ever be a Prime Wrestling, like, reunion show for, like, a one-night-only type deal, like, you know, what was done with ECW, like, as far as ECW one-night stand, like, something of that with Prime Wrestling?
That was talked about at one point. Hell, an outright revival of the company was talked about at one point, but I don't think it would be fair to put a product out there today and label it Prime Wrestling because it wouldn't be the same. I could very easily go to Premier Championship Wrestling and just say, well, this is Prime Wrestling now, but you don't have a TV outlet. You don't have the same production. You don't have the same talent. You don't have the same structure of the live events. You don't have the same touring business model. So much is different that it would be unfair to both the current company and the former Prime Wrestling to compare the two, because in some ways I think Premier Championship Wrestling has a ways to go to match what Prime Wrestling did, and in other ways I think Premier Championship Wrestling is doing some things now better than Prime Wrestling had done. As far as a one night only, again, we're difficult at that point because when I think of Prime Wrestling, the number one name that comes to mind is Johnny Gargano. Johnny Gargano would not be available to us because of his NXT contract. The number two name I would think of is M-Dog 20 Matt Cross. Matt is very in demand all over the world. I believe he's in Europe for 3 weeks right now. Plus, he has a Lucha Underground contract. So while he is available to me, I could not guarantee that I would be able to lock him in without Lucha Underground or a big money international tour or something keeping him from us. When I think of Prime Wrestling, the third name on my list is Jason Bain, who has been retired for 3 years. I would also think of Josh Prohibition, who's on a very limited schedule. I think of Jimmy Jacobs, who now works in an office capacity for WWE and it wouldn't be available. Marion Fontaine has minimalized his schedule. Jeremy Madrox has retired from the ring. There's just been a big turnover in talent where I feel like if just one or two of the names I mentioned aren't part of the Prime Wrestling reunion, it's not really Prime Wrestling. So it would just be difficult to recreate that. And again, it's opening a wound that doesn't need to be opened. It's reopening a book that doesn't need another chapter to it. If the time and the place was perfect, I'd absolutely do it. But I wouldn't want to do it without Johnny Gargano. And I wouldn't want to do it without the guarantee I could have everybody there that was special. Gregory Iron, Bobby Beverly, on down the line. Everybody there that made it special. And made it what it was. Because the last thing I would want to do is bring it back and have it feel like a cheap knockoff or feel second rate. So could that day come? It could, but no time soon because I just don't think the talent is in a place where we could deliver up to what Prime Wrestling was.
And, you know, I can totally understand, you know, where you're coming from. Like, you do want all those names to be available. So, yes, they would feel like Prime Wrestling. And I totally understand that, and I do understand the point 110%.
Here's the thing, too. Not to cut you off, but here's the thing, too. If you miss Prime Wrestling, watch Premier Championship Wrestling, because if Prime Wrestling had never ended, the roster would probably look a lot like Premier Championship Wrestling does now, because a lot of the business practices and philosophies I used to build Prime Wrestling, I'm using those same things now to build Premier Championship Wrestling. So I would say at least 80% of the talent that works for Premier Championship Wrestling, if Prime Wrestling had ever went away, they would be there now. And probably doing something very similar to what they're doing in Turnazol. So the spirit is there and the philosophy is there, even if the name has been put to rest, if that makes sense.
You know what? That does make perfect sense. And, you know, as far as the Prime Wrestling name goes, you know, just the name. Like he said, it's almost like a wound that doesn't need to be opened up, a chapter that doesn't even need to be written, because really, if you think about it, you guys did have the perfect storybook ending for the name Prime Wrestling. But yes, you know, now that you say that and all the guys that we know are in Premier Championship Wrestling and everything that you do have going there now, it is like the rebirth, pretty much. It's starting over, and I really think that Premier Championship Wrestling is going to have a huge amount of success, because I know what Prime Wrestling brought to the table, and, you know, with you just talking about the same philosophies and everybody and everything that's in Premier Championship Wrestling right now, without a doubt, I gotta tell you, Joe, I think Premier Championship Wrestling is gonna be the indie promotion to watch in Cleveland, Ohio.
I certainly hope so. It's, you know, there's a lot of different business strategies that are different from Prime, and obviously the infrastructure is a lot different. So, it's much like when Prime started as PWO. It's a steep mountain to climb. But we're showing progress. Every month is a little better than the month prior. And the next month will be a little bit better than that, hopefully. So far we've had that pattern very well. And it's been very consistent. So I hope you're right. I mean, the passion is there. I don't think there's a single fan that has left our events yet unhappy. I know the talent enjoys working there, and it just needs to keep building and building, and word of mouth will hopefully continue to grow and only help us from there. So we'll see what the future holds, but I'm in it for the long haul. I'm in it until the guy that signed my checks tells me to stop being in it, but that's not going to happen anytime soon. So I'm more than happy to keep doing my best to give Cleveland something different, something special.
How long ago did Premier Championship Wrestling start? When did you guys open the doors?
We did a test run in August 2015 at the West Park Party Center, which was a mixed bag. Some things about it were successful, some things about it weren't. I was very happy with their in-ring product and the talent. Business-wise, it wasn't where it needed to be. So the ownership took some time, restructured, and we gave it another go and started in Turner's Hall in August 2016. And we've been running every month since then. So that's 8-9 months now. And like I said, a little bit of growth every month. Every month is a little bit better than the last. And we're seeing signs of progress and improvement. And I think we're coming off of our last event, April 15th, with maybe as much momentum as we've ever had. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what the future holds.
I'm definitely excited, you know, because ever since the one indie promotion that I've been checking out in Cleveland for like the past couple of years has been AIW, Absolute Intense Wrestling, out in Cleveland. And now that I hear about Premier Championship Wrestling, I think I'm going to have to go and pay you guys a visit.
Well, you're certainly more than welcome, my friend.
And I would like to touch. I'm just looking here, and I see that I've kept you a little bit more than an hour, but we've been having such a great conversation. There is one more thing I'd like to touch on with you, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Now, I've seen videos on YouTube, and I've even seen, you know, clips from back in the day on Prime Wrestling when you would do interviews with, wrestling legends like Kevin Nash or King Kong Bundy and, you know, just great names in the pro wrestling business. And I'm just curious to give people a little insight about, certain superstars or maybe their favorite legends in the business. Who are some of your favorites that you've gotten to interview, and what's some real memorable interviews with superstars that you've had over the years?
Man, I've gotten to interview and do commentary with so many great talents. My favorite on camera might be Paul London. Just because of how out there his personality is and how instantaneously we mesh together. I love working with Jim Cornette. Jim is an amazing broadcaster and is always on the top of his game. I really haven't had a bad interview. I mean, the Kevin Nash interview was awkward because somebody fed him pasta during the thing. I've gotten so many bizarre comments, compliments, insults about that Kevin Nash interview. It's probably the most watched thing I've ever done. Then I love it. I love the whirlwind of emotion and intrigue behind it. I guess my guilty pleasure would be the time I went into the apartment of Virgil and sat down and interviewed him. And we put it on DVD. We called it The Legend of Virgil. And that was my receipt and my response to Virgil's con jobs at all these conventions and signings where he overcharges and tries to weasel money out of people. That was my chance. Just ask Virgil enough questions to give him enough rope to hang himself, so to speak. Just to put out there who and what the real Virgil is. We'll fact check him. We'll talk to some people who have met him, and we'll present him as he deserves to be presented, however that may be. And that was a lot of fun to do. And Virgil annoys the piss out of me a lot. But you know what? I didn't mind that one. And That felt good. That was cathartic for me. And you know what? Virgil loves having his name in the spotlight too, so he'll get over it. But, yeah, always a fun time, no matter who I'm talking with. I love the fact that every interview is different, different style, different approach, but, you know, it's up to me to adjust and find out how to bring the best out in everybody. And, more often than not, I feel like I do that. I really enjoyed getting to interview Cody Rhodes, this past fall, not too long after he left WWE, and, he was on his way to TNA. He was on his way to Ring of Honor. He had his checklist. He was working his way through. And Cody was a complete gentleman in every sense of the word. So I have nothing but good things to say about Cody. And also another one that was a favorite of mine was Broken Matt Hardy. For as unpredictable as he is and, how on he is, it was a lot of fun to be able to share some, at least audio screen time with Matt, talk about who he wanted to delete. That was a lot of fun, too.
It sounds like you've had quite the career and quite the journey throughout the years.
It's been a great run, but I'm far from done yet. I'm just getting warmed up.
I'm excited to, you know, hopefully have you back on sometime and, you know, talk to you about all the things that are yet to come, you know, like, I'm sure fans would love to hear updates about, PCW and, you know, all that stuff as it happens. And I would definitely love to have you back on the show to talk some more, you know, and, as some time goes by and more PCW shows happen.
Without a doubt, there's always news to talk about, so I'm sure we'll be able to do a follow-up episode in not too distant future.
That would be great. I would like that a lot. And, I, like we were just talking about, I know that, I don't know why I'm gonna ask this, I just wanna ask you real quick. You know, out of all the guys that you've interviewed, you know, we just talked about, usually you're the one doing the interviewing. How does it feel to sit back, relax, and be the one getting interviewed for a change?
Oh, it's great. I mean, it's far from my first interview. It won't be my last. I like telling my story, and I like talking about the things I'm passionate about, which, you know, I wouldn't be doing this if I wasn't passionate about it. So, you know, it's a great time to relive some memories that maybe I haven't thought of in a while, and hopefully make some new fans along the way, and hopefully turn some people on to what's going on out there. Every fan counts in independent wrestling, and if one person will buy the welterweight wrestling fight eye pay per view just based on this interview, then I'm very happy to have done it. It was well worth my time.
And you know what? I gotta tell you, I know we spoke a little bit off air before we came on, but I gotta tell you, for this benchmark 50th episode of doing this podcast, and you know, I've had quite a few people, you know, come down the pike. I've had Buff Bagwell on here, I've had the Patriot on here, you know, just to name a couple. And I gotta tell you, Joe, having you on here, the stories that you told, I mean, this is a really remarkable podcast, and one of my favorites that I've done. It definitely ranks up there as in one of my favorites, definitely within, I would say, probably the top five that I've done. It's been a great, great conversation, and just hearing these stories and reliving the memories, and now getting to hear the stories of this new up and coming brand of PCW and the welterweight tournament, you know, that's going to be happening. I mean, this is really something, and this is something that really resonated with me.
I'm happy to hear that, man. Hopefully there's a few thousand more out there like you, and we'll have a hell of a time together on iPay-Per-View May 7th.
It'll be fun. Now that we're approaching the end of the show, I'm gonna turn this over to you. I know you basically gave people information throughout the podcast, but if you got, you know, anything on social media, anything with the upcoming events that you would like to promote one last time, or just anything you want to promote at all, feel free to go ahead and I'll give you the floor.
Without a doubt, welterweight wrestling will take place Sunday, May 7th at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, live from Turner's Hall and Guthrie Avenue, or you can watch it anywhere in the world. Fight, F-I-T-E, $14.99. You buy it once, you get unlimited lifetime replays, three camera HD shoot, three full hours. No matter how you join us, you're going to get your money's worth, to be sure. You can find out more information at welterweightwrestling.com. Full card will be posted, ordering information, and a whole lot more. Facebook.com/welterweightwrestling, at welterweightpw on Twitter, and welterweightwrestling on Instagram. Premier Championship Wrestling takes place each and every month at Turner's Hall. Facebook.com/premierchampionshipwrestling, PCW Cleveland on Twitter. My website is joe-dombrowski.com. You can check out the whole 10-volume Best of Prime Wrestling set, the Wrestlution Anthology, which was our biggest event every year, and the monthly PCW events we've been doing, 9 in total, a 10th to be released in about a week or two's time. Now, my website, joe-dombrowski.com, also has my social media links and my full store with a bunch of great rare memorabilia on sale as well. Please feel free to support as you see fit, and I thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, Joe. I really appreciate having you along here, and, you know, I got to tell you, next wrestling show that I got on the books so far is going to be the Northeast Wrestling, the Wrestling Under the Stars Tour on July 8th in Niles, Ohio. That's the next one I got on the books, but maybe sometime before that, if I can, or if not, definitely after that. I'm going to be looking into checking out PCW because you got me really curious with it now, and it's something that I really feel I could sink my teeth into. So I'm definitely going to be checking out a show at one point.
That's great. We'll see you there for sure.
All right, Joe. Well, I'm going to, if you would like to hold the line for just a minute, I'm going to sign off the air here with everybody, so please hang on the line with me for a minute. And just to let everybody know here on the air, I appreciate all of you watching tonight. I hope you enjoyed this incredible episode number 50 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling podcast for April 27, 2017 with Joe Dombrowski. I want to thank Joe for being here again, and this is an amazing, amazing show for episode number 50, and I hope you guys go and check out PCW, check out joe-dombrowski.com, and order some DVDs, whether they be PCW, Prime Wrestling, whatever they are, check it out. Joe knows how to put together a great product, and I promise you guys, taken from a longtime watcher of Prime Wrestling, and I know how Joe puts together a product, you guys won't be disappointed. So buy some DVDs and check it out. I know you'll love it. So thank you very much for watching and listening tonight, ladies and gentlemen, and I will be back with you next week for episode number 51 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling podcast. And I'm Big T. And another big thank you to Joe Dombrowski. And I love you all, and I will see you all next week. Take care. Good night, everybody.